Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Keehan. Today we'll discuss the article by Francois et al. Titled, Resistance-Based Interval Exercise Acutely Improves Endothelial Function in Type 2 Diabetes. This article published November 1st, 2016. Joining me today are consulting editor Nisha Charkoudian, lead author Jonathan Little, and content expert Ellen Dawson. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. We all know that exercise is good for us, and for many of us, we probably have the impression that we should exercise more than we do. But what if someone told us that we could exercise less than we currently do and still get similar cardiovascular benefits? The current trend for high-intensity interval training, also known as HIIT or H-I-I-T, seems to do just that, condense the positive impact of exercise training into brief sessions that sometimes last 10 minutes or less. In the study we'll be discussing today, Francois et al. From the laboratory of Jonathan Little at the University of British Columbia, Okanagan, evaluated whether high-intensity interval training using either a cardio-type workout, which was cycling, or resistance-type workout can cause acute or immediate changes in vascular function. Jonathan, could you tell us a little more about the study and what your goals were in designing it the way that you did?
Thanks, Nisha. My lab's interested in the cardiovascular and metabolic impacts of exercise training, and we focus a lot on HIIT, which is a pattern of exercise where you do a vigorous portion, and then you take a break, a rest or recovery, and then you repeat that, and you can repeat that 5 to 10 times throughout a workout. And the protocol that we use is 1 minute on, 1 minute off. And in this particular study, we were interested and whether this acute high-intensity interval training had any effects on the endothelial function in type 2 diabetes patients. And really the idea to study resistance interval-based training came from the lead author, the PhD student in my lab, Monique Francois. And she's very interested in finding practical and novel solutions for exercise for individuals with type 2 diabetes. And resistance training is very effective for this because you don't have to be able to walk. You don't have to be able to have an exercise bike. The exercises we used were very simple, practical leg lift, leg extension type exercises. And we thought that resistance intervals would be a way that you could get your cardiovascular or aerobic type of exercise in, as well as get your resistance training, because we know the guidelines state that individuals with type 2 diabetes should do both. And that takes up a lot of time. So the idea was to see whether the interval training had an impact on endothelial function, and then to see whether this practical or novel version of interval training involving resistance training in the interval pattern would have an effect. So what we did is we recruited 12 type 2 diabetes patients, 12 healthy age-matched controls, and then we had another group that was age match, so older adults that were highly trained. So these were masters athletes, individuals who were, most of them were cyclists, cycling greater than 7 hours a week in their typical training pattern. And we studied these individuals in response to one bout of cardio-based cycling interval or one bout of resistance-based interval training. We measured endothelial function using flow-mediated dilation of the brachial artery before and after, and then at 1 and 2 hours after. The bottom line is that the resistance interval-based training seemed to be the best for improving endothelial function, and the type 2 diabetes patients actually responded the best. So they saw improvements, fairly robust improvements in FMD immediately after exercise, and this was carried on throughout the 2 hours of recovery.
Thank you. Those are very exciting results. Could you speak a little more about the importance of studying people with type 2 diabetes?
Individuals with type 2 diabetes are 2 to 4-fold higher risk of developing cardiovascular disease. We know it's the number one cause of mortality in people with type 2 diabetes is cardiovascular mortality. So it's important to study the cardiovascular impacts in this disease. And there's really a push right now. Obviously, type 2 diabetes is a disease characterized by high blood glucose, and our current treatment paradigms are glucose-centric or try to lower glucose. But there's a really big push right now that maybe those are misguided or not the best way, and we should really be looking at the cardiovascular and vascular complications, so considering type 2 diabetes a vascular disease. So that's why it's important to study vascular function in type 2 diabetes. We know that exercise is advised in a frontline therapy, but we really don't know what the best type of exercise is for these individuals with type 2 diabetes for improving their cardiovascular health or preventing cardiovascular disease. So that's really what drives our research, trying to find a novel, practical, and easy to implement exercise strategies that will impact the vascular function of someone with type 2 diabetes.
Right. That makes sense. Very interesting. Ellen, you've done a lot of work in the area of exercise effects on flow-mediated dilation. What are your thoughts about the relevance of the present work in the context of existing reports from your laboratory and others?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting one. I think it will vary depending on what mode of exercise we're giving to these individuals. So if I can ask Jonathan a question, how intense would you say the resistance exercise training was for these individuals?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it was one that we struggled with in the design. Anyone who's tried to match resistance training to aerobic training would know how difficult that can become, because it's fairly easy to quantify work or calories burned in aerobic exercise, but it's not that easy in resistance. So what we did is we chose to match the muscle groups used. So we used leg muscles and match the pattern of exercise. We thought that would be important for the shear stress and the blood pressure responses. So it was 1 minute on, 1 minute off. But this was fairly light resistance training, fairly light load. The individuals resulted in a rating of perceived exertion of about 5 out of 10 on a 0 to 10 scale. They would do about 20 repetitions of a light weight, and they would do this as many as they could in the minute. If I had to throw a number on it, we didn't do it as a percent 1RM, again, because the idea was to try to match the perceived effort. But if I could throw a number, I would say it was probably about 60% of 1RM. They would do as many as they could in a minute, which would be about 20 repetitions.
So I think that fits quite well with what we generally think happens in the literature, where really high intensity exercise will probably cause an acute decrease in FMD, whereas the lower intensities and the moderates, because we're not getting a big increase in blood pressure, we're probably not going to see that acute decrease. But I suppose the next question is, even though we're getting acute changes, is that then going to stimulate a training response, which is, I think, something we're not all sure about yet, if there's a relationship between the acute and training vascular responses. I don't know if you've got a thought about that, Jonathan.
Yeah, that's a great question, and certainly we're very careful in the interpretation to indicate these are acute responses. We have done a study with type 2 diabetes patients over 12 weeks doing this exercise protocol. Now, we didn't compare resistance interval to cardio interval. It was a combination. And we do see a fairly substantial increase in their fasting or resting FMD values after 12 weeks, about a 1.5% improvement in FMD. So we think there is a training response. Again, the study comparing just resistance to just cardio-based interval exercise, we have not done, and I'm not aware of that in the literature.
Right. Thank you both. That's a very, very interesting discussion. To follow up on that a little bit, maybe a little bit more applied in terms of the big picture, Jonathan, I think one of the bigger problems that clinicians have is that people are not often compliant with exercise prescription. Do you have any thoughts about just the feasibility of this type of thing that you're working on?
We've published in people with prediabetes that over 1 month, they can adhere to interval training fairly well, and it's actually better than how they adhere to traditional cardio-based training. So I think the conclusion that I draw when I'm trying to talk about this is that interval training should be an option for individuals, because the benefits are there. They're at least as good, and people seem to be able to do it. Resistance training adherence, there's very little done. There's much more to be done on that.
Great. Thank you very much. Ellen, I'd like to ask you a little bit more of a physiology-based question. We know that FMD looks at the function of usually the brachial artery. Could you comment on any other types of blood flow adaptations that are seen? For example, microvascular changes or other areas of blood flow that have been studied that may be affected or helped by this type of interval training?
I think the benefit of all these kinds of exercises is that we're not really specifically training just one area, but it's a whole body exercise intervention. And you're increasing blood flow and you're increasing the output from the heart. We're going to get increases in blood flow throughout the entire system. So we're going to be training the heart. You're going to be training, you know, like you said, the microvasculature. So we're going to be seeing improvements in I think this is particularly obviously relevant in type 2 diabetes, where we want to improve microcirculation and improve glucose uptake. But I think there's also evidence for improved cerebral vascular function as well with exercise training. So I think it follows on from what Jonathan said and what you were saying with the bigger picture. Ultimately, the message I think we need to be sending out is we need people to be exercising, and the best kind of exercise is the one that they're going to continue to do.
So I'd like to ask both of you, we'll start with Jonathan. As you think about the research that you and others have done in this area, has it changed your own approach to exercise?
This particular study has got me doing more resistance-based HIIT. A lot of my workouts now, instead of maybe going and doing a workout on the bike or a workout running on the treadmill, I will incorporate a resistance-style HIIT. And I don't necessarily do exactly what we did in the research study, but doing interval pattern, 1 minute on, 1 minute off, or 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, with a variety of resistance-based exercises.
Ellen, do you have any thoughts about that?
We certainly see it around with our friends where HIIT's certainly becoming a lot more popular in terms of from an elite side, in terms of just trying to improve performance, but then also just from the general population side, trying to get people just doing some form of exercise.
So Jonathan, as you know, since you've worked so much in this area, one of the things that comes up with high intensity interval training is often the question of safety. Can you speak a little bit about how you screened your patients and also what safety measures you had in place for the purposes of these studies?
Yeah, that's a great question, Nisha. And so all of the type 2 diabetes patients were screened with a 12-lead physician-supervised stress test prior to participating in the study. And that's consistent with the guidelines. The exercise is not sprinting all out. It's at about 85% of their maximum. And it's certainly something that they can accomplish. For many of these patients, 85% of their maximum is equivalent to walking briskly up a hill. We don't have enough information on the safety of prescribing HIIT to the masses right now. And we need to be cautious. And I always tell everybody, any vigorous exercise, you should check with your doctor first. And if you have type 2 diabetes, then clearance from a cardiologist or your physician is always recommended.
I'd like to take this opportunity to sincerely thank you both. This has been a fun conversation and really interesting, I think, to a lot of people. Jonathan Little and Ellen Dawson, thank you so much for joining us for this podcast. Kara?
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology podcast. For more podcasts like this, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.